Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to Murder Mile, a true crime podcast, an audio-guided walk, featuring many of London's untold, unsolved, and long-forgotten murders, all set within 1 square mile of the West End. Today's episode is about David West. Two David Wests, in fact. A father and son, with Dave Sr. being a self-made millionaire, and Dave Jr. being the future heir to his empire. And yet, it wasn't greed which ruined their lives, but a strange and very familiar love. Murder Mile contains satire, as well as upsetting details which may make the uneasy go as well as realistic sounds, so that, no matter where you listen to this podcast, you'll feel like you're actually there. My name is Michael, I am your tour guide, and this is Murder Mile. Episode 42, The Death of David West, by David West. Today, I'm standing in Ormond Yard, just off Piccadilly Circus, one road west of St. Albans Street, where Greta Hayward narrowly missed being the next victim of the Blackout Ripper. One tube stop south of the murder or suicide site of film star and boxing champion Freddie Mills, coming soon to Murder Mile. And oddly, we're back in the same street and the same building where the bungling assassins of Russian dissident Alexander Litvinenko left traces of highly radioactive polonium-210. Situated at the rear of Jermyn Street, a haughty little back street famed for its pointlessly pretentious art galleries, dusty musty bookshops, expensively bog-standard bistros, and a slew of bespoke tailors, who'll fawn over you if you're famous, suck up to you if you're a soap star, with a need to have their lips surgically removed from your anus if you've ever been on telly. And yet, with locked doors, alarmed windows, and their noses perpetually set to snooty, the second you walk in, they're more likely to call the cops if, like me, you're nothing but an unknown cretin. Whereas Ormond Yard is just a yard, an off-street, a dead end. And being barely 250 feet long by 15 feet wide, with an odd mix of nondescript buildings, it looks more like a service entrance to a chain store than a posh place to plonk your bot. But that's the point. As although these million-pound pads are full of actors, writers, and designers, it was here, in the middle of Ormond Yard, on the evening of Friday the 12th of December, 2014, that a gregarious, loud, and gauchely dressed self-made millionaire called David West was brutally stabbed to death by his own son. Born on the 14th of March, 1944, in the struggling market town of Romford in Essex, David John West, known as Dave, was raised in poverty. As after 5 years of wartime rationing, and with 8 years of starvation and malnutrition still to come, back when tap water lacked purity, savings were a rarity, and fresh fruit was a scarcity. Dave lived in a drab grey world, devoid of colour, health and wealth. Stuck in a hand-to-mouth existence, weak with hunger, shamed by his threadbare clothes, and limited by a basic education, although he came from nothing, Dave was determined never to be poor ever again. In 1962, as an ambitious but unskilled 18-year-old, Dave enlisted in the British Merchant Navy, where he sailed the seas to far-flung regions of the East and West Indies. And although his stint was brief, it peeled open his eyes to a new world of opportunities, lit a raging fire under his feet, and fueled his desire for travel, money, and food. But first, there would be fruit. Returning to his roots, Dave ran two market stalls in Brentford and Romford. And as a larger-than-life character, whose loud shirts were as gaudy as his fruit, who dripped in the tacky gold chains and sovereign rings of a poor man who wore all of his wealth, but had the ever-expanding waistline of a rich man who ate well, drank heartily, and never let anything go to waste. Working every hour of every day, Dave was a natural-born entrepreneur who was determined to be a success. In 1969, age 25, being recently married to his pregnant wife Kathy, Dave opened a small cafe in the Belgian village of Zeebrugge, serving chip butties and greasy fry-ups to the throng of British day trippers who flocked to the newly built ferry port with empty bags and bulging wallets, eager to stock up on cheap booze and duty-free fags. And although it started small, it was here that an empire was born. Being a business which began in a caravan, by the mid-1980s, having relocated to a vast warehouse in the larger ferry port of Calais on the French coast, Dave had opened Europe's largest British-owned cash and carry, which sold budget booze in bulk, cheap fags by the bag, £1 bottles of wine, and quickly made Dave a multi-millionaire, who was hailed as king of the booze cruise. Life was good. Dave was rich beyond his wildest dreams. With a vast business empire, a £2.5 million house, a Rolls Royce, and a wardrobe full of bright pink suits, crocodile skin shoes, and chunky gold chains. He was married, happy, and healthy, with three lovely children. His firstborn was a boy, who he named David, after himself. And although he was eager that his son would enter into greatness, having inherited his empire, even though Dave Jr. was deeply devoted to his dad, his notoriety would be as his father's killer. Born on the 21st of August 1970, David West Jr., known as Little Dave, was a spitting image of his father. Squat, sweaty, and spud-headed, but a good lad with a big heart. And unlike most millionaire's sons, he wasn't spoilt, rude, or nasty, and never took anything for granted. As with a lot resting on such a tiny set of shoulders, just like his father, Little Dave would learn every nuance of the family business from the ground up, with lots of heavy lifting, long hours, and very little pay. As a deliberately difficult and deeply divisive figure, Big Dave was described in a myriad of different ways. To some, he was a maverick, a rebel, and a troublemaker. And to others, he was brash, flashy, and crass. And although some men might take those words as an insult, to Big Dave, who courted controversy as part of his keenly crafted image of an Essex barrow boy turned business tycoon, this Big Dave saw as a compliment. And always, at his side, through thick and thin, stood his beloved son. In 1999, Kathy and David's 30-year marriage ended in divorce, when the 55-year-old pink-suited, gold-chained, and mullet-haired Lothario started an affair with a blonde French waitress, 31 years his junior, and a full 4 years younger than his own daughter. And although the family were devastated by the breakup, by his side, no matter what, was his son. Big Dave didn't give a shit about what anyone thought. He was his own man, a self-made millionaire with no one to answer to but himself. And as he worked hard and played hard, the richer he got, the less he cared. He lived by this motto, "My money, my rules." And if you didn't like that, tough shit. In May 2005, the father and son team opened their first nightclub called Hey Joe in the basement of 91 German Street with a back entrance at number 67 Ormond Yard. It was tacky, gaudy, and vulgar. A true assault on the senses, an affront to decency, and an insult to good taste. With mirrored walls, pink frilly booths, red velvet sofas, urinals shaped like lips, gold-plated taps modelled after his own erect penis, and sexy waitresses dressed as naughty nurses, all serving his own brand of house wine, smutterly titled with labels like "The Dog's Bollocks" and "Manage Toi." But Hey Joe was just the way that Big Dave wanted it. And as a stiff middle finger to the stuffy, stuck-up Mayfair club scene, Hey Joe quickly became a success and was swiftly followed by several more venues, including a lap dancing club called Puss in Boots, a strip bar called Mandy's, a nightclub called Pigalle, and an equally gaudy restaurant above Hey Joe's called Abracadabra. By 2007, heavily aided by his loyal and devoted son, David West Sr. had amassed a vast cash and carry empire, several West End nightclubs, a personal fortune of over £100 million, and being listed in the Sunday Times Rich List as one of Britain's wealthiest men, Big Dave was on top of the world, with nowhere to go but down. In contrast, when Big Dave lived in his luxurious £2.5 million house at number 8 Ormond Yard, right next door to Hey Joe, when he wasn't working, which was rare, his son lived in a modest two-roomed flat above the nightclub, which he rented of his dad. When Dave Sr. was worth £100 million, Dave Jr. was paid a paltry wage of just £500 a week. And as his father neared retirement age, although his son had dedicated the bulk of his life to their business, Dave Sr. saw his 35-year-old business partner as nothing more than a little boy. Although it is said that he truly loved his son, as a father, Dave Sr. was not a big softy full of cuddles, kisses, or kind words, or even encouragement, advice, or support, but was a firm believer in tough love. And with Junior having never received a thank you, a well done, or heard the words, "I'm proud of you," being eager to prove his worth, little Dave knew that their next venture would be his biggest test yet. just above Hey Joe, on the ground floor of 91 German Street, with its back entrance at number 67 Ormond Yard, stood Abracadabra. But this would be more than just a fancy West End restaurant. This would be another fuck you by David West to high society and the establishment. Everything about Abracadabra was deliberately wrong, ludicrous, and deeply offensive. And just like Hey Joe, this 150-seat restaurant was a monument to bad taste. As in Dave's eyes, there was no such thing as bad press. Described by one reviewer as like eating an overpriced McDonald's in a brothel, Abracadabra served everything from the finest Russian caviar to cheap slop like pizza, pasta and burgers, all of which was swigged down with all kinds of posh plonk, from a £29,000 bottle of Cristal to a £20 bottle of Blue Nun, which diners digested amongst a decor so gaudy it was impossible not to puke. Everything in the restaurant was either Harlequin-themed, mismatched, or out of place. With burly doormen dressed as court jesters, chairs spray-painted gold like lavish thrones, table lamps designed like sexy legs in stockings, a giant Santa Claus carved from chocolate, and every square inch of wall crammed full of images of naked ladies, like there'd been an explosion in a teenage boy's bedroom, as well as love booths, prick taps, lips pissers, and tables which flipped over to reveal kinky S&M bondage gear. But this was just the way Big Dave wanted it. And although unconventional, Abracadabra was a roaring success. And having sweated, wept, and bled over the restaurant, Little Dave felt that he had done his dad proud. But if he was, his dad didn't show it. As a man who always got his own way, age, ill health, and an excess of alcohol had made Big Dave both bitter and belligerent. And whereas, after 30 years of working together, Junior still believed that they were a father and son team, but in truth, he was treated less like the heir to the empire and more like the hired help, who was there to be used, abused, insulted, humiliated, and ultimately sacked. Big Dave was a drunken bully with a short fuse, a quick temper, and a vicious tongue. And although he was never physically violent, for every hour of every day, for what would become 4.5 decades, he belittled his son, branded him a failure, poured scorn on his every success, and most hurtful of all for Little Dave, his own dad deemed him a disappointment. And after too many years of slogging his guts out, earning a pittance, and ending a long day by carrying the bloated 25-stone comatose bulk of his paralytic papa to bed, as he was too pissed to climb the stairs, soon enough, the pressure, the pain, and the hurt got too much. And Little Dave walked out. 1 year shy of his 70th birthday, although he was too proud to admit it, Big Dave was a mess. He was alone, frail, and broke. And after half a century of heavy boozing, reckless spending, and with the world being 5 years into an economic recession, Mandy's was struggling, Puss in Boots had shut, Pigalle was sold, his entire cash and carry empire had collapsed. And like two giant garish leeches, both Hey Joe and Abracadabra had brought Big Dave to the brink of bankruptcy. And as much as he hated his dad, for the way that he had been treated and for what his dad had done, his son still loved him. And needing to save his frail and feeble father, 1 year later, little Dave returned. But nothing had changed. The last bitter battle of the two David Wests occurred on the afternoon of Friday the 12th of December, 2014. Ormond Yard was deathly quiet. Which was odd, as being the second to last Friday before Christmas, the garish Harlequin-themed restaurant should have been abuzz with pissheads at office parties. But the street was ominously empty. And with no lights, no tree, and no tinsel, just a depressed doorman dressed as a jester who stood guard outside of the bright pink facade of Abracadabra. Although such a striking image was designed to be shocking, bold, and silly, as if a six-year-old girl had defaced an old pub with a tin of pink paint in tribute to My Little Pony. Now, it just looks sad. Inside was no different, as 9 years on, with its paint peeling, its decor drab, and much of its sparkle gone, although a slew of tacky Christmas tunes played. In this garish eatery, there was no festive cheer, seasonal joy, or hijinks. In fact, the only spirits were those consumed in abundance by both Davids. It began over a set of missing keys. Only they weren't missing. They'd just been misplaced. And by 4 p.m, as Big Dave drunkenly scolded his son for something which wasn't even his fault, a furious row erupted. And having necked back the best part of a bottle of vodka, as the fat bloated man in the garish pink suit sat on a gold spray-painted throne and spat hurtful curses like failure, leech, and useless at his boy's tearful face. With never a thank you, those 45 years of hard work came to a crushing end. As David West Jr., heir to the empire, was sacked by his dad. Being heartbroken, hate-filled, and hurt by his hero, as he slugged back several whiskies, Junior began to pack his bags, as for the very last time, he would leave his flat, his future, and his father forever. Just shy of 6 p.m, Big Dave had drunk himself into a senseless stupor, and as the bitter alcoholic rambled and seethed, thinking it best that he sleep it off, his assistant, aided by a doorman jester, carried the former king of the booze cruise home. From a window, one floor above Abracadabra, little Dave spied a pathetic sight, as the fat stumbling legs of his frail and feeble father buckled under his sweating and wheezing bulk, as even with two aides, this intoxicated, selfish mess, who was once a self-made millionaire, struggled to stagger even a few feet. And seeing his chance, little Dave decided to have it out with his dad once and for all. Strangely, although the back entrance of Abracadabra was a garish pink eyesore, just to the left, at number 8 Ormond Yard, although this was where Big Dave lived, the house was uncharacteristically bland, all brown brick, bare wood, and a flat front. And as little Dave pushed open the stylish dark green front door, on the bright white carpet, At the foot of the stairs, in a crumpled mess of pink and gold, it looked as if a clumsy drag queen had dumped a bag of trash. But they hadn't. That was his dad. As little Dave stood there, looking down at his once great hero, lying slumped, drunk, and comatose in a creased and sweating heap on the floor. Although this frail old man was totally defenseless, inside his son stirred a bubbling rage, as 45 years of hate, abuse, and humiliation spewed to the surface. As a history of hurtful words like failure, leech, and useless bounded about his booze-addled brain. Big Dave gasped, his bloodshot eyes popping wide, as a 10-inch kitchen knife was plunged deep and hard into the billowing rolls of flab in his thick, fat neck, slicing open his caustic throat, which too many times had scorned his son. And as little Dave retracted the blade, it severed his jugular vein. And then Big Dave gasped again. As still being angry, his spurned son stabbed the full length of the stainless steel blade deep into his father's flabby chest. And like a shocking piece of garish art in one of his truly tacky nightclubs, he left the handle sticking out, embedded where once his hero had a heart. With his last breath, David West Sr. crawled into Ormond Yard, and as a pink-suited man with a ghostly white face lying in a sticky puddle of red, before too long, he was dead. Conflicted by a cocktail of revenge, remorse, and regret, little Dave called the police and confessed to his crime by stating, "I would like to admit to a murder. I've just killed my father." And although, as the tearful man was arrested, being clearly racked with a mix of guilt and glee, he couldn't help but admit, "I'm glad he's dead. But the thing is, I should have kicked the fuck out of him before I killed him." On the 1st of September 2015, the trial was held at the Old Bailey. And although blood was found on his clothes, his fingerprints were on the knife, and 45-year-old David West Jr. had confessed to the police, in writing, that he had killed his father, he pleaded not guilty to murder. On Monday the 9th of November 2015, prosecution accepted a plea of being guilty of manslaughter on the grounds of loss of control and diminished responsibility, and in a relationship between father and son, which was described as toxic, the recorder, Nicholas Hilliard QC, stated, "It is clear you suffered from verbal abuse and aggression from your father for many years." David West Jr. was sentenced to 13 and a half years in prison. He will be out in 2028, if not sooner. And of the £100 million fortune? By the time of his death, David West Sr. had just £131,000 left in his bank account. And although he'd began as an Essex barrow boy who'd become one of Britain's wealthiest men, having blown the lot, his empire, his estate, and his son's inheritance was now worth nothing. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening to Murder Mile. A huge thank you goes out this week to my new Patreon supporters, Hayley Clark and Louise Claydon. Thank you, Hayley and Louise. I hope you have a fabulous week full of joy, wealth, health and happiness. And of course, another episode of Murder Mile. Murder Mile was researched, written and performed by myself, with the main musical themes written and performed by Evick Stein and John Books of Cult With No Name. Thank you for listening, and sleep well.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Murky Milers. I've decided to call you Murky Milers because you stay into the murky bitter end. If you like that, let me know. It was going to be Mucky Milers, but that's, that sounds like a kind of a dogging thing. If you don't know what dogging is, don't Google it. Whatever you do, don't Google it. Murky Milers, I thought that's a nice name for everyone who stays to the bitter end. So, hope you enjoy that. It took me hours to think it up. I had to hire in a creative team. Cost me a couple of £100,000. And we all brainstormed it for hours. And actually, I didn't. I just came up with it just then. Literally just came up with it then. A cup of coffee, nice and cold. So this is Extra Mile, the waffly bit. No sound effects, except you can hear a chaffinch outside. It's just started up. And the train in the background. I'm in the middle of nowhere at the moment. It's quite nice. Just finished the bank holiday in Britain. So obviously we had, well, unless you're a podcaster and you work every single bloody day, which is what I do. In Britain, you're meant to have Saturday, Sunday and the Monday off. This is the Tuesday. Where I am now was full of like little plastic, shitty, little awful boats. Families bashing into my boat. It was really frustrating. But it's Tuesday morning, just after the bank holiday, and it's nice and quiet. No one's out. For regular listeners of Murder Mile, you would hate it here. There was no coots. We're in a coot-free zone. I know. Maybe they've been booted out. Maybe they've been sent off. Maybe they're on the holidays. Maybe that's what coots do in the summer. Maybe they go to the beach. Maybe Mr. Randy Coot is currently sitting on the beach wearing a little pair of Speedos. With a windbreak, and he's trying to eat a sandwich, but there's bits of sand blowing into his sandwich, and it's going all crunchy. And as he's walking along the beach, he's going, "Oh, this is nice soft sand." And then he steps in a dog shit, and it goes between his toes, and goes, and he goes, "Oh God, that's why I hate going to the beach." That's British holidays for you: sand in your sandwich, dog shit between your toes, and wind and rain. So I'm waffling. This is so yeah. No, I'm in a nice part of the world. The little boat is just moored up. It's nice and peaceful. So I'm just doing Extra Mile. I thought I'd start by saying a big thank you to everyone for your kind words. recently. Everyone's been really great. Loads of people have left me lovely messages, which really does help, because it's quite a lonely job doing this. So it's very nice. Even just people just saying, hey, I enjoyed the episodes. So it's all been very nice. People have left lots of reviews. iTunes has shot up. It really has. It was like, it's almost doubled in about the last month, which has been great. Everyone's left little reviews, or even just click the button that just says 5 stars and then they've left, which is great. It really does help. So thank you for that. Sorry, I got burpees again. Keep getting burpees. And I just wanted to say a big thank you, especially to everyone, for your kind words about the Glyndor Michael episode. Originally, that was going to be my episode 1 for season 2. Because I really liked the story, but I was very worried about it. Because obviously it's not your usual Murder Mile episode, because obviously it doesn't contain a murder. It doesn't contain a murder, doesn't contain a murder victim, doesn't contain a perpetrator, doesn't contain a weapon. Do you know, there's no motive. It's kind of, it's none of the elements are there. But I believed in the story. I believed in the Glyndor Michael story, and I thought it was fascinating. And I've known about it for years and always wanted to tell that story. But I thought, meh, you're probably not going to like it. So that's why I kept putting it off. I kept putting it off every week. I was like, no, maybe next week, maybe next week. So it was going to be episode 1. It ended up being episode 10 or something like that. Or actually, no, it's episode, technically it's episode 40, yeah, I think you're right. I think I'm right. So yeah, but everyone seemed to like it. You really seemed to enjoy it, and it made me very happy. So yeah, and it was something very different from Murder Mile as well. It was very, it wasn't your usual thing. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's given me more kind of confidence to kind of try different experiments. So that's what I'm doing with these episodes now, is what I don't want is it to become predictable, which is why I've taken away at the end of each episode, while I used to tell you what the next episode was called, now I don't. Because firstly, I don't know what the next episode is, because I have a lot already kind of researched and drafted, but I don't know what's next. Literally, I'm recording this one now, I still am not too sure what the next episode is going to be, so I'll work that out this afternoon. The Glyndor Michael one, I just kept putting off, but now it's given me the confidence to say, yeah, I can just keep trying different things, and that's what I want to do. I want to throw you off slightly. So obviously last week's episode was the Charlotte Street robbery, so it was a kind of a robbery with a murder hidden in there. But that was the kind of idea with that one, is that a lot of people focus on with the Charlotte Street robbery, the fact that it is it changed the British legal system forever, but everyone forgets about the little guy in there, Alec de Antiquis, who was murdered, which I think is more important, and the struggle of his family. So yeah, I'll start throwing some more of those in. You seem to enjoy it, so that's good. Story about the two David Wests. This is one of our more recent murders. Obviously, because the murder happened in 2014 and the case was in 2015, there's no archive file for this, and there won't be until probably, this could be 2090. I mean, the judge hasn't put a date on it yet. It could be, 100-year case, so it could be 2115, of which I probably won't still be alive by then. I do like ice cream, so probably not. It says no archive file, because it's quite a new case. But luckily, David West Sr., Big Dave, I'll post some pictures online for you so you can see what he looks like. Hopefully I've described him well. Big, fat, sweaty man. Who, with a love of wearing bright pink suits and gold chains, and yeah, I hopefully that sums it up. But he was a man who courted controversy all of the time. He loved it. He loved being in newspapers and on TV shows, and he had a lot of critics who would love to rip him apart, because not only was he garish and quite vulgar, but it's the establishment. The establishment don't like it when. Because establishment tend to be kind of posh kids who go to posh schools and get cushy jobs. They hate it when a poor person or someone from the working class background works hard and works their way up. Instead of being given money and wealth, as most of them were, You know, they hate it when someone works hard, when someone really works their ass off. So they actually, a lot of people in Mayfair resented David West because he worked hard. And as much as people didn't like him, he was a deliberately divisive figure. He did work hard. He's a hard worker, but he was a hard man to like as well. So that became really useful. There's a lot of articles in various newspapers and dotted around that tell you a lot about David West Sr., but not very much about David West Jr., the man who would kill him, his son. He was very much a man in his father's shadow. So there's not a lot known about him. So this was very much kind of... I told David West Sr.'s story, David West Jr.'s story through his father. So all the way through the story, what I tried to do was have David West Jr. in the shadows. He's always there. He's always hiding, hiding or being hidden by his father's largesse. So I hope you enjoyed the story. I thought it was quite interesting, the whole father and son dynamic. There are some things that obviously I removed from this story, not too much that I removed on this one, but so obviously at the start I mentioned that Hey Joe had become a favourite haunt of various Russian businessmen in London, because obviously even though it was a Harlequin themed restaurant, for some reason they decided that much of the food in there would be Russian food. And I don't know about you, but when I think of exquisite cuisine, I don't really think of Russian food. You know, there are some, like, let's be honest, some, you think exquisite cuisine, you don't think British either. But you'd probably think French or maybe Italian or something like that. But you just wouldn't think Russian anyway. That's, I think that was part of their thing, that they wanted to be garish and shocking. And they would go, we've got exquisite cuisine and it's Russian. And everyone goes, ooh. I think it was just an excuse to have oysters and caviar and champagne and vodka and that kind of thing. Anyway, Hey Joe opened in, it was in 2005 to 2006. And the in 2007, so it hadn't been open too long, that establishment featured in the investigation in the assassination of Alexander Litvinenko, which I mentioned at the start. If you haven't listened to it, that's episode 20 on Murder Mile, and it's Alexander Litvinenko was a Russian dissident. He was quite critical of Vladimir Putin and... basically everything that's going on in Russia and the way it's kind of, there is no control, there's no freedom of the press or anything like that. Litvinenko was a great critic of Putin's. He moved to England as a journalist, started doing lots of work, and he... Ducks outside. He eventually was... noisy duck as well. He was eventually poisoned. They put... polonium-210, which is a highly radioactive poison, into his tea, and he drank the tea. He only had a couple of mouthfuls, but within a couple of days he was dead. It's a really horrific death. They tried a couple of attempts. It was Andrei Lugovoy, and I can't remember the other guy's name, but they were trying to kill him. They met up with him a couple of times, tried to pour polonium-210 into his tea. They were really awful assassins, although they're meant to be some of the best. If you listen to the story, episode 20, they left polonium all over the West End. It's on everything. Some rooms have literally been... they tried to decontaminate them, but as far as I believe, some of them are still shut. And it was found on seats and cushions. And in Hey Joe, which was the nightclub downstairs... below Abracadabra, it was polonium-210 was found everywhere in there. Only small levels of it, but enough. And David West Jr., most people would have shut up about it. Most people would have been like, oh my God, you know, there's radioactive waste found in my restaurant. But David West was like, you know, joking about it, having good fun. And he even is quoted in the press as saying, we came out with a glowing report. As there were only low levels of radiation found, but still radiation. Now, even when David West was going downhill, actually no, this was a start. So just before, around the time that he was he'd amassed £100 million fortune, and he was one of Britain's wealthiest men. In 2006, in Britain, the smoking ban had been brought in. Now, as I said before, David West Sr. liked to be quite a divisive figure. He liked to flip the middle finger to the establishment. He didn't like to be told what to do. And this is a good example of exactly what he was like. So in 2006, the smoking ban had been brought in the United Kingdom, which basically meant you couldn't smoke in any restaurants or pubs or public areas inside. There were very strict laws about it. I used to smoke back then, and it was weird. I remember it coming in. It's like bars used to be thick with smoke, and then all of a sudden one day it was like click, and there was no smoke in bars anymore, but all you could smell was sweat and farts. It was really disgusting. I quit smoking not too long after that, and it was a good time to quit smoking. But it was weird. So all of a sudden, it was the summer of 2006. I think it was August. I remember being in Edinburgh, and it was no one could smoke anymore. Now, David West was a big smoker. He loved smoking. He always loved smoking. And he hated the fact that no longer could people smoke in restaurants. So he decided that he was going to buck the trend. He was going to flip the mid-digit to the establishment and the government. And he was going to say basically a big old F you to the smoking ban. And in his restaurant, after the smoking ban, you could go in and the waitress or waiter would say, do you want smoking or non-smoking? And you could go to whatever section you want. He hadn't partitioned it off. He was going for it. But because he was a divisive man, he'd hired basically a QC, Queen's Counsel, who's one of the top lawyers in the country. Basically, if you are charged with murder, there is a QC who looks after you, who is basically your defence or your prosecution. They are the QC. They are the biggest and most expensive lawyers in the country. Queen's Counsel. It used to be King's Counsel in the days when we had a king, but we have a queen, obviously. And the one that he hired deliberately to fight his case against the smoking ban was a lady called Sherry Blair. Now, that name might not ring a bell to anyone outside the country, outside of the United Kingdom, but Sherry Blair was the wife of Tony Blair, who was our former Prime Minister. And in 2006... Tony Blair was the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, and he brought in the smoking ban. So that's exactly what David West was like. He was going to fight the smoking ban, which had been brought in by Tony Blair, our Prime Minister. And to combat that, he hired Tony Blair's own wife to do it. That's exactly what he was like. He couldn't just hire any old lawyer. He would hire the Prime Minister's own wife to counteract government rules and legislations. So that's exactly what he was like. Very divisive, loved being in the papers, loved causing up a shitstorm, hence why all of his restaurants were so garish. And yet, interestingly, when you look at his house, I've put pictures online, I've put a little video as always, so if you go to Murder Mile Discussion Group on Facebook, or my website, there's always a blog on there with a transcript, or Instagram, or etc., social media. There's a video on there. It shows you the street, which is Ormond Yard, which really, honestly, you'll look at it and you'll go, that really does look like a place where trucks would deliver stuff to stores. It really does. It looks vague and empty and just odd. And then I've had to put a picture on there to show you what Abracadabra originally looked like. And when I say it looked like a six-year-old girl attacked an old pub with a pot of pink paint in tribute to My Little Pony, you'll go, yes, I entirely get that. I think that's one of the best descriptions I've ever said of a place. And that was Abracadabra. But when you look to the left of it, number 8, which was David West Sr.'s house, it's bland. It really is bland. It's literally a three-story building with brown brick on the first and second floors. To anyone who's an American listener, when I say first floor, I mean it's ground floor, first floor, second floor, not first floor, second floor. It's ground floor, first floor, second floor. So the first and second floor are brown brick, and then on the ground floor is basically a garage door, which is wood, very plain, and then a kind of dark green, quite elegant front door. It's got a kind of an Edwardian feel for it. It's got kind of a silver kind of knocker on it and an ornate number 8. And it looks, it's simple but stylish. And it's exactly how it was in David West's day. And you look at it and you go, it doesn't make sense that someone so garish and vulgar with all of those, everything that he projected into all of his restaurants, which was vulgar and shocking and rebellious, and yet he lived in a place which was so understated. It's have a look at the video and you'll go, are you sure that's the right place? And yeah, I'm absolutely right. It's in fact, the first time I walked down the street, because in most of the reports, they never said where David West Sr. lived. I don't know why the press do this. They have a habit of not putting the numbers down. So they'll say they lived in a house on Ormond Yard. But it's like, what was the number? Tell me the bloody number. And they didn't. So what I had to do, I had to go through all the texts of all of the different documentation. And it was literally piecing it together of where David West Jr. lived. They said he lived above Abracadabra. I found where Abracadabra was, even though it wasn't really listed anywhere. I managed to find out the exact address. I found an old picture and I put them side by side. I'll put the pictures online for you to see. And then you could see the forensics tent where David West had died, just outside his house, and the number that he'd walked out of, which was number 8. So I like doing my little detective work of matching up pictures and just going, ah, there it is. And keeps me entertained. What else was I going to say? Oh, so just prior to the murder, so David West Jr. at the time he had a girlfriend called Victoria Lockwood, and they were living in Felixstowe together. So Felixstowe is on the south coast. It's a very nice part of the world. I've got a lot of friends who got to move from London to Felixstowe, and they're having a great time. Lovely place by the coast, nice big beach. You can't blame people for living there. It's absolutely lovely. But he texted his... David West Jr. texted his girlfriend. I can't work out exactly what time it happened, but it looks like it happened just after the second argument between the two David Wests. And he texted her to say, a lot of people need sorting out and it's going to happen tonight. And that was the last thing he texted to her. And then he stabbed his father to death. One thing that I deliberately left out of here because it throws it off, but a lot of people seem to reference it on various cases, is one of the neighbours on the street was obviously Mr. Stephen Fry, host of QI TV series in United Kingdom. Americans may know him probably. He was in a couple of films. Used to be a partner with the now the world famous Stephen Fry. Used to be part of Fry and Laurie, one of my favourite comedy double acts of the 1980s. Now he's a neighbour there. He lives on that same street on Ormond Yard, and he told the reporters, I was at home on Friday night when I heard these horrifying screams and wondered what was going on. The emergency services were desperately trying to revive him, but were unfortunately unable to do so. I saw them place a cloak over him after he passed away. It's an absolute tragedy. Well, there we go. But apart from that, there were very few witnesses that night. The club was mostly empty, but a lot of people heard the argument going on. And even her name was Oksana, and she was David West Sr.'s assistant. And she recorded the second argument that they had. So she was one of the primary witnesses in court, and she played the full argument to the jury. Now, obviously, we can't get access to this case, and we can't hear what they actually said. So this is just, I've had to piece this together through fragments that we've heard about the case itself. Anyway, I hope that was good. Hope that was interesting. We got a question from a loyal listener. Ooh. And the question is, obviously, each week I say, if you have any questions, just message me. Just tag them with like Q&A and I'll put them into each episode. You can ask me anything you like. A message from Hayley Clark. This is amazing. I've no idea how I know what's in her head and what question she's going to ask. She messaged me. And her question is, what's the best way to bump off your boss? Now, I thought I might tell you a little story here, if I may. It's a true story. And this happened to me. The guy wasn't really my boss, but he was senior to me. He was a bit of an arsehole. I'm not going to say what company it was. I'm not going to say when this was, because it might give it away. But ever since I started working for that company, he used to treat me like a piece of shit. He really did. I don't know why. Always treated me like a piece of shit. He was a massive bully. Every single day was just attacking me, not physically, but just having a go at me. Everything I did was just treat me like a piece of shit. And I really hated him. But what I wanted to do was kind of get my own back on him. But obviously, you know, you can't do a lot. If someone's senior to you, and you're basically, I was a nothing in the company. I was like on the lowest rung. I didn't even have a contract. So it was like, what was I going to do? So I thought, you know what? I'm going to start messing around with him, but I'm not going to let him know that that I'm doing this. I'm going to keep it discreet. So what I'd start doing was I wanted to make him think that he was going slightly mad. And so sometimes he'd leave the office and leave his computer open. So I'd start if he was halfway through a document, I'd start writing things into the document, but writing it as gibberish, or putting in things that he looks like he'd written in there, but clearly he hadn't, or he'd make him repeat himself. So he'd reread it, having already checked it, going, hang on, why does it say that there? Or just move things around. I started going in and going into his diary and putting things in an hour earlier. So he'd turn up to meetings an hour early and just the entire day would throw himself off. And because he'd put in the things himself, he would go, why is this happening? And it was constantly happening. It wouldn't ruin his job, it wouldn't mess up, it wouldn't cause him any problems, but it'd just be one of these things where he'd be stuck somewhere for an hour and he's thinking, why am I here? Why did I do this? I started moving. There's a lot of documents that we thick documents. I'm trying to not describe what they were. And he'd have bookmarks in various kind of books and things like that. I would deliberately move the bookmarks. So when he'd come back after lunch to go back into where he'd started, he'd go, I've already read this page. Just kind of things like that. I'd leave little odd post-it notes everywhere as well. So whenever he'd open a document, there'd be an odd post-it note in there saying something really strange or innocuous. Nothing threatening, but just things that were just off-kilter that just wouldn't make any sense at all. I had a lot of fun. Like, he would plug in his phone to various plug sockets. I would move those around. So at the end of the day, he'd come to unplug it and he'd go, where the fuck is it? And then he'd realise it was on the other side of the room. Just little things like that. And it just kept him on his... It's made him feel very uncertain. So I didn't do anything to make him kill himself. Although it was little things that wound him up. And he never knew it was me. And it was just fun. Just things that I kept doing. I like things like that. I'll throw in another little story as well. I used to live with a guy years ago. I used to live with... I had loads of flatmates. And I had one flatmate who was... He was a nice guy, but the problem is he liked really crap music. So, do you know, all that crap. Yeah, only idiots listen to that crap music. And every day when I come in from work, he was always on the ground floor. That's where his room was. And he'd be sitting in the room by himself, but his music would be like really loud and shaking the walls. And it was really annoying. And I'd come in and go, do you mind turning it down? He'd turn it down a bit, then he'd turn it back up again. And he wasn't an arsehole. He just liked his loud music. But I don't think he understood that you could buy earphones. And asking him to turn it down just wouldn't work at all. So one day I was walking into the house and he got the... and I thought, okay. So I crept into the house really quietly. I opened the front door, closed it really quietly, and I crept up to his front door. And his front door was just slightly open. And I peeped through the crack between the door and I waited until his back was turned. And then just as he turned his back, I walked right up behind him and went, "Rah!" And screamed into his head like that, and then laughed and walked away going, ah, like that. And he turned down his music just a little bit. because he didn't want me to do it again. And then, interestingly, the next day, his music was still up. So I did it again. I came up behind him and went, rah! Like that. Third day, his music was really down quite low. I think he knew that I was going to come in and I was going to do it again. And then even when I was in the house, he didn't turn his music back up because he was always worried that I was going to creep in behind him. And after that point, he never had his music up. So there are little fun things you can do. You don't have to bump someone off if you don't want to. But if you despise someone, there are really interesting ways in which you can really F them over. Now, if you have a boss that you don't particularly like, I'm not saying that you should kill someone, but obviously all bosses have a bit of an ego to them. So the best way to get rid of them is to use their own ego to kind of go against them. So you can do this if you want to bump off your boss and not get caught for it. I'm not saying that you should do this, but tell them that they look slimmer when they drive faster. Simple things like that. So placate their ego. So what you want them to do is you say, oh, do you know, when you drive fast, you look really great. It makes them want to drive faster, so they're more likely to have an accident and kill themselves. Not that you want them to do that, but they can do. Tell them that new tyres are for losers, especially when they're driving fast. Say that the fashion this week is to have bald tyres as opposed to grip. Or maybe tell them that of all of the richest people in the world, all of them have baths whilst listening to a radio that's plugged in. Simple things like that placate their ego. They're all vain people. Or maybe tell them that mercury gets rid of wrinkles. Most bosses are idiots. They will all fall for it. God, this makes me want to release my book. This really is the book that I wrote that I've mentioned many times before, which has never been released. Oh, this is what the book's all about. It's not about murdering your boss. It's about working environments, and it's about how to get away with doing nothing, and it's about how bosses get away with doing nothing, and how they can be assholes and how they can get away with it. God, maybe in a year's time, maybe I might release it. Maybe I'll release it to Patreon supporters. Or as a prize to eager listeners of Murdermal. Maybe I might do that. I don't know. I was just going to say about the Charlotte Street robbery. Now, that was last week's episode. I don't know how it's gone down yet, because this is Tuesday. It doesn't go out till Thursday. And it was a bugger to record. I'll be absolutely honest with you. With my episodes, I try to be about a week to 2 weeks early. That's what I was at the start of the season. But obviously, all of these episodes used to take 6 days. They're now taking 8 to 10 days. The Charlotte Street robbery took 2 weeks to make that. It may not sound complicated, but I wrote it. I recorded it. I edited it. I was doing my final checks before it goes online, because I always do a final check to make sure there's no little mistakes in there or you know, glips or kind of mouth sounds that I hate. Ugh, I hate things like that. And as I was listening to it, I stepped away from it for about 2 days, and then I'd gone back to it and was uploading it, and I listened to it and I went, oh no, and I realised I'd made a mistake. I'd made a big mistake in the story, and it's nothing that you would have noticed, but it would have annoyed me for a very long time. So I had to go in and rewrite it. Re-record it, re-edit it. So the Charlotte Street robbery took like an extra 5 days on top of everything else. So I'm now very behind. So the Patreon supporters who got the Charlotte Street robbery episode, normally I upload that a week before, you got that episode literally as I'd finished it. I literally was like, right, upload now. That was Monday. So, I'm slightly behind at the moment. So, I'll definitely be taking a season break shortly. I'm not too sure how many more episodes I'll do in this stretch. Probably another, I think I've got another 5 to do. Then I'll take 3 weeks off, because I need to do research for the multi-part series that we're going to do. Which will take us to February. But I've got 3 extra mile episodes which will go in, which I've already planned, and they're going to be exciting and fun. They won't be waffly. They'll be a bit waffly. But there's some interesting things that I'll throw in that. So that'll be good fun. It'll be a little change to the season as well. I think these mid-season breaks are really useful for me. They really help me. And that means I can go to the National Archives and sit down and do some serious research, which is what I need to do. So, oh dear, having a good stretch. Oh, it was good. Oh. So that was episode 42, The Death of David West by David West. And we will be back next week, unless I cock up again. And hope you enjoyed that. Murky Milers. That's the Murky Miley people. I'm going to end this episode with a song, I've decided. Yeah, I'll do that. I'm going to end this episode with the lyrics from the Beverly Hillbillies. Oh my God, yes. How do I remember that? It's still in my head from all those years ago. If anyone remembers the song, you're welcome to join me in singing it. If you're in a public place, this would be so funny if you started singing this for no particular reason. So after three, even if you can't remember the lyrics, go with it. Okay, it's the end of the series, okay? It's the bit, we're going to sing the bit where, do you remember when they're all waving at the end? And then Granny's there waving and she gets really tired and she has to start holding her hand and she's flopping it around like it's broken. So here's the end lyrics to the Beverly Hillbillies. Now it's time to say goodbye to Jed and all his kin. Or they would like to thank you folks for kindly dropping in. You're all invited back next week to this locality to have a heap big helping of the hospitality. Hillbilly, that is. Etc. Hope you enjoyed that. We'll be back next week with some more nonsense. Thank you, Murky Milers. Speak to you soon. Ta-ta!
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.